Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast this afternoon. In this episode, we welcome Mr. Graham Speed. He's the CEO and founder of a company called BankVault.com. Now, Graham describes himself as an entrepreneur, a technologist, and a kite surfer. Exactly what that means, I'm not exactly sure. Maybe can elaborate more on that here. He and his team work at the intersection of, you know, financial technology, cloud computing, and cyber. The company is based out of Australia, and they've now just recently expanded into the United States and have their main base of operations in the Silicon Valley, San Francisco Bay Area. BankVault has won a number of top awards, including the Financial Technology Startup Worldwide Award, as well as the World Cup Tech Challenge. It was a very competitive race across 35 to 50 countries. And BankVault fortifies the security web logins, you know, by ensuring your user passwords so that can never be intercepted. And also stops ID theft by preventing the six major attack vectors that hackers use against, you know, individuals to steal, you know, login credentials and other forms of personal identifiable information. Graham, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Robbie. Thanks very much.
So can you explain from two standpoints, how does a hacker intercept an individual's or even a business's username and password, for example, that's tied to their bank account or main credit card account? And second, if a user has a FOB, kind of like an RSA token, or even an SMS text, doesn't that guarantee that hacker can't possibly gain access to their online account? How can a hacker bypass all of these authentication mechanisms, in other words?
Thanks, Robbie. So if you look at the volume of cyber attacks on the internet, almost all of them, certainly more than 99% of cyber attacks by volume, are actually targeting our PCs and smartphones. And the goal is to capture your login credentials to online accounts, for example, your bank. And if I've got your login credentials, I can potentially steal the money from your bank account directly, or I can just redirect a financial transaction. I can certainly access sensitive private data. So this is a really, really big problem. Identity theft is like a huge industry these days, and it's growing exponentially. And the chilling thing is, it's actually very simple to do. There is a teenager can get hold of a keylogger and trick you to installing onto your computer. These things can be a little bit of JavaScript, for example. You click on an email link, you know, to download an attachment, you know, a cleverly worded email. You'll click that button to download an invoice, for example. Or you'll simply go to a website. And websites now run on JavaScript. Web browsers are designed to run JavaScript instantly. So you've only got to open that browser and activate anything on that screen, and that JavaScript is now in your browser. And this is what we call non-malware. It is legitimate code, and it's just going to do the wrong thing. So I remember a quote from Symantec saying that non-malware, on average, can be in your browser or PC for 10 months before the hacker actually stings you. And during this time, they learn everything about you. So it's very simple to capture your login credentials to the bank. But if I've got your login credentials to your bank account, I'm now only one step away from tricking you to using your banking FOB or revealing your SMS text or Google Authenticate or whatever you're using as your two-factor authentication. And it's a little bit of social engineering. I mean, all I've got to do is, for example, today I know you've got a lot of money in your bank account. I can see the bank balance. I can log in anytime I want, but I want to transfer the money. So you log in to your bank account. I'm sitting in your lap, effectively. I'm in your browser. I've been there for 10 months, and, you know, I just put up something on the screen that asks you for your banking FOB, and you think that it's the bank. It's not. It's me. You give me the number. I've got 35 seconds now to use as many times as I like, and your money's gone. But it can even be easier than that. I could if you're loading up a list of creditors to pay, you know, you're a company, you're loading up your suppliers or your payroll, for example. All I've got to do is change the numbers behind the screen. What you see and what is actually going to happen is completely different. you then authorize it with your FOB, and the money goes to my bank account. So this is a very big problem now, because you've got to prove to the bank that you're not defrauding them. There's a bit of tension. You know, why did you authorize that transaction? You know, at what point should the bank take responsibility for who you've shared your computer with? And so this can actually take a long time to investigate by a bank. Meanwhile, your cash flow is crippled. And the two most precious assets of any business or even any individual is your cash at bank and your reputation. And that's gone within hours. So that's kind of how it happens. It's a very severe problem. And I'm just talking about banking here, but this is literally logins to any of your online accounts.
Okay. Well, now, how does Bank Vault stop this? How do your products and services actually prevent this from happening?
So the technology Bank Vault created originally was to allow a user to take control of their own cybersecurity and basically sidestep anything on their local PC. We call these our end user tools, WebSafe and Safe Window. We've also just released a radically simple new innovation, which we've called an invisible keyboard for web servers. So an organization, an institution, or even a small business can actually deploy this now in their web server, which then ensures that their users are sidestepping their local devices when they're logging in. It's a very simple technique. It's fundamentally obvious. People understand it in a heartbeat. And it does it seamlessly without the institution even deploying any technology to their users. So we call it an invisible keyboard for the web.
Okay.
If I describe how it works, for example,
what is the invisible keyboard for the web? Yeah, how does it work exactly?
Yep.
Can you give us more details?
Yeah, so if you can imagine you're logging into, I'm going to use the analogy of a bank here, but this could be literally a school or a medical center or, you know, any sort of organization with a web login. You know, there's a database behind it. So what appears on screen for the user is a normal login page, and we also add a QR code to the screen. The user enters their username. When they go to enter their password, it won't let them. And there's a little bit of text underneath the password fields to say, scan the QR code with your phone. If you open your iPhone and just open the camera and hold it in front of the QR code, it takes about 2 seconds, and your phone becomes a keyboard. And this is only an illusion. So what we're doing is we're actually sidestepping your workstation. We're now getting you to use your mobile phone. It appears that your phone is talking to the workstation, because every time you touch a character on your phone, it appears as an asterisk on your screen. But what's actually happened is that we're using a separate device on a completely independent channel talking back to the web server. So the only place that characters are being created is inside the web server. The web server is echoing asterisks back on screen. So there's nothing in the workstation other than asterisks. And what we have on the mobile phone is only the illusion of a keyboard. It's only an image set up by the web server. And we're sampling effectively screen coordinates, microcells, which we encrypt, pass that back. The only thing in the universe with the security secret to decrypt that is that specific web server session. Creates the characters back there, echoes the asterisks back on the screen, and we also know the device signature of the mobile phone. So we effectively are creating multi-factor authentication, something that you have, your mobile phone, and something that you know, your password. But we're doing it in a way that's completely invisible to the user, and there's actually no deployment of any technology to that device. User logs in to their accounting system or their database, bank account, whatever it is, and just works normally. So it's really simple. And if they're working on a mobile phone, there's no QR code to scan, because you can't go scanning a QR code on your phone from your phone. It's literally just a keyboard. It looks completely normal. And, yeah, off you go to the races. Done and dusted in a couple of seconds. It's intuitive. This is a completely unique new technology.
Wow, sounds awesome. Now, in cybersecurity today, we know one of the biggest buzzwords is identity access management, and that can mean many, many things to different people. It can mean using a password or using MFA or using 2FA. Is your service or product, is that a newer form of identity and access management? Could you please get into some more detail about that?
Yeah, it is the new form of IAM, and it is different to anything else that's out there right now. Yeah, identity and access management could be anything from passwords, biometrics, for example, your hand scan, your iris scan, multi-factor authentication like a banking fob, Google Authenticate, etc. I think if you look at any of these solutions that are out there right now, particularly when they're moving away from passwords, you'll find that there is significant changes for an organization to implement. So you've got to change your back-end infrastructure. You've got to deploy technology to the end users, and if they're remote customers, for example, a bank, that's a hard logistics exercise. You've got to then train them in what the changes are, and then you've got to manage this massive migration changeover. And so, you know, we're seeing, you know, technologies out there that allow you to log in without a password, but the adoption of these technologies is as slow as a glacier because it is such a big logistics exercise and the cost associated with it. Even if it was a free technology for the institution, the project to actually roll it out is significant. So what you'll see is that also because of the friction that it creates for an organization's customers, it's kind of a last resort. People or, you know, companies don't implement two-factor authentication unless it's really important and really necessary. They normally do it after there's been a significant hack. So in contrast, Bank Vault doesn't require any changes to the back-end infrastructure. We're not changing passwords. Zero change. It's completely intuitive to the end user, and there's no deployment of the technology there, so nothing to do there. And to actually implement it within a web server is about 20 lines of code. It would take about 20 minutes, and you could roll it out to a million users. So you might want to spend a few days or hours thinking about it, but the actual work is trivial. And in terms of the concern about, well, you know, who is Bank Vault? Can I trust Bank Vault? I mean, you're trusting the institution. They would do their diligence on this. And for the programmer sitting there programming this into the system, he knows. He's the only person, or, you know, the web server is the only place that actually has the context to marry the username coming in on one channel with the characters for the password coming in on a separate channel and the device signature. The only place in the universe is inside the web server, inside the institution. Boom. It's so simple. And I think that's one of our huge edges in the market is this simply hardens the data entry of users in a way that no malware on the phone, no malware on the workstation can ever see anything. We are not creating characters there. There's nothing to intercept. So I'll just add to that, you know, if you look at the major attack vectors that are targeting users to capture these login credentials and do the wrong thing, you know, you've got keyloggers, you've got screen scraping, you have man-in-the-middle, man-in-the-browser attacks, you have robots there, bots and phishing attacks. And none of these work now. Six major attack vectors that target users to capture login credentials basically are thwarted because we are forcing a human being to be in that process. Bots simply don't work.
Okay. Wow. Now, let's get into your customer segment. Who is your target customer? I mean, is it the banks, the end user, Fortune 500 companies, small, medium-sized businesses? Can you expand more on that, please?
Sure. So for the invisible keyboard for web servers, it's really organizations, and it can be a small business with a web login, or it could be as large as a banking institution. It's right across the board. The institution or the organization, the small business, implements it, and their users, their customers, simply inherit it. As I said, it's intuitively very obvious to use. So this is also a horizontal market play. So it literally can be added to any website on the planet with a web login. Wherever security has a consequence, this is relevant. So it could be, we built it originally for a bank, but it could be applied to any financial application. You could use it in healthcare, in education sector, in government. It's literally right across the board. So I think one of our paths to market is actually probably SaaS providers. A vendor writing an application deployed as a software as a service. Accounting systems, CRM, customer relationship management systems, logistics systems, procurement systems, portfolio management. It's literally any website with a web login.
Okay. Do you have any customer success stories you'd like to share with us? Any case studies?
So we have, the technology is actually very mature. We lodged the patents on this about 2.5 years ago. And there are users using this. Where we started actually was providing this to individuals, small businesses, medium businesses, and professionals, individuals. The pivot really over the last 12 months has been to take that single element embedded with our other end user tools, which was the invisible keyboard, and reproductize that so that it now connects with a web server. So the web server version of this, what we call the invisible keyboard for web servers, is a brand new technology. It's mature, it exists, but we are actually right now just releasing it to our first customers. So the sort of pilots that we have rolling out are proof of concepts, early stage. We get to make revenue off this, but we expect this to grow really rapidly because we're now talking to the institutions. What we have is completely unique, and it can fit in anywhere. So even guys that would appear to be our competitors would actually appear to be more likely to become actually partners, or in fact even acquirers. Maybe I could actually just change tack and talk about the end user tools that this grew out of.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So just to restate the problem, if you're sitting there at your local PC, you're in your company, you're responsible for the banking, or even if you're sitting at home doing something online, the issue is that almost all the cyber attacks out there are actually targeting your PC. And it's very simple to hack your browser, to have an update come in, have a bit of non-malware in your machine. These attacks are undetectable. It's legitimate code. It's not a virus. Viruses don't matter anymore. They're actually quite irrelevant. So what we want to do is, if you're doing something where it actually really is important that your confidentiality is maintained, your banking, for example, then don't use your computer. What we wanted you effectively creating here is where you can go down the street, buy a brand new laptop, use it once, and then throw it away, and do this every single time you're logging into an important website. So the technology is quite clever. You basically log in to a website, the Bank Vault website. You press a button. We build a remote machine. That machine is invisible from the internet. We call these invisible bank vaults. So inside that machine, you can see out. It's like a one-way mirror, but the internet can't see you. And this is using a very established technique called IP masquerading. It's been around since the internet. So inside that machine, you can now launch a browser. We've done all this process in about 1 second, by the way. So this is basically an instantly built machine. It's invisible from the internet and it just appears in your browser, but it's remote. You can do anything you like in that machine. You could log into your bank account. You can open up an email with a virus. You could even talk to the blockchain. And then once you're finished, it evaporates without trace. There's nothing stored. And so we call that product WebSafe, Bank Vault's product WebSafe. It's an end user tool. You can use it for anything you like. It's effectively a burn machine, gone in seconds.
Oh, wow. Now, do you have another innovation in the pipeline? Is there going to be something coming up here soon? Or what are your expansion plans in general, if you can elaborate on that for our audience?
Yeah, just, we're not short on ideas. The team that I run is an innovation team. We've been together for about 12 years now, and we have a string of really cool technologies that we've released, and these kind of keep building on the shoulders of the previous ones. So, I think, yeah, if I just talk about where we started with this, the first issue that we had is we built this amazing system that, you know, we were building. Supercomputer technology. It was a cloud computing platform designed to run a business's IT systems inside a supercomputer. And the real innovation was we could get rid of all the Microsoft licenses legally, and we would basically have future-proof computing because every time a user would log in, instead of launching their old virtual desktop virtual machine, we would actually build a brand new one. What Amazon was taking 40 minutes to do, we worked out how to do within 2 seconds. So that was our first patent. So it was, we basically described it as self-computing, a future-proof computing built in seconds. And what we, the real pivot here was when we realized we could actually apply this to solving a different problem. And what happened is I had a phone call from a real estate agent who had the fear of God put into him by our government that real estate agents' trust accounts were being targeted by hackers and actually were successfully being hacked. And this is a serious issue because trust accounts, if you're the trustee, you are personally liable for that money in that trust account within 24 hours. If you don't replace it or can't replace it, the government shuts you down at 48 hours and you're out of business. And this is happening. This happens surprisingly, terrifyingly quite a lot. So applying our supercomputing solution to this was, we came to the industry of cybersecurity from a different industry, kind of walked in, stumbled in backwards and realized we have a solution that was completely unique that no one else had thought about. It was fundamental. It was quite, you know, straightforward. It was very easy to understand. You're simply sidestepping your machine. You're not using your local device. And then we layered on other things. You know, we worked out, you know, we can make these virtual machines invisible from the internet. The idea of coming up with a virtual keyboard, or what we call the invisible keyboard, was a way of sidestepping the keyloggers by using the phone, and we found smarter ways of doing that. Each of these has evolved through multiple steps. One of the most clever technologies we've actually created is what we call a web bridge. So when we build a remote machine, that machine appears in your browser. And in contrast to, as far as I know, every single one of our competitors out there that do thin client architecture, this is not thin client. There is no client. That is like night and day compared to everybody else. So literally, you can sit in front of any browser on any device, log straight in, and the remote machine desktop is appearing in that browser. On top of that, we've layered the ability to put video through there, transfer files, even transfer sound. And so the experience is like a normal desktop running inside your browser, and yet everything's completely remote. And the reason, or the, I guess the real benefit of having no client is that there's nothing to maintain on the end user. So if an institution wanted to roll this out to 1 million users, they can, and there's nothing to deploy. It's like get the user to press login. That's it. It's really cool tech. We've done, you know, other things, you know, around encryption, using the device signature of the machine that you're using to be the key to encrypt the data. And these sort of technologies collectively could be applied to even things like the blockchain and cryptocurrency. We had a completely unique way of protecting, you know, your Bitcoin, which we created about 2.5 years ago. We're effectively are creating a graphical proxy to a crypto exchange or your wallet. So we called these invisible wallets and invisible exchanges. It was a new category. And if you compared the crypto industry, what was happening, you know, I think the first half of 2018, the industry was losing around $9 to $23 million a day to hackers. This literally cut off every attack vector. We're creating an image of your crypto wallet or your crypto exchange, and basically sending it as a stream of pixels into your browser. It's only an image. There is no code. So yeah, completely unique way of looking at it. That industry's dried up, of course. We're not doing that anymore. And one of the cool things we've got in the pipeline right now, it's already built, operational, ready to release. We haven't released it, is what we call a fortified VPN. And if you think about cybersecurity from the point of view of we use VPNs to either get access to geo-blocked content. For example, if you want to watch the BBC News TV in London or ITV in London from Australia or from the US, you probably can't. You'd set up a VPN to do that. VPN means you've got to install software, you've got to find a secure endpoint that you trust, you've got to pay for that. It's a little bit messy to set up, and it actually doesn't save you from a cybersecurity point of view at all. You're still opening up the same websites in your browser, so the JavaScript is in your machine, you're opening up your email attachments, those things are going to execute in your local machine. It really doesn't save you from a cybersecurity point of view at all. But what is different about the fortified VPN is that you're launching a remote machine. It appears in your screen, in your browser. The experience from now on is if it's running locally. We'll give you a little button at the bottom of the screen to choose your country. You could pick, for example, London with one click. You are now instantly in London. You can launch Firefox, go to YouTube, knock yourself out. And there's literally nothing installed on your local device. So the setup is zero. The software to install is zero. There's no accounts to set up anywhere. It just works. And there's nothing can get outside of this environment because there's no code allowed out. It's purely a stream of pixels. It's like sitting in front of a dumb television screen. There's nothing to hack.
Sounds like you're really on the cutting edge of technology there. It sounds very, very exciting. Now, Graham, if one of our listeners wants to use one of your products, like the Bank Vault Web Safe, the Fortified VPN, or the Invisible Keyboard, how do they go about it? How do they contact you? What's the cost if they're looking at it? Could you give us some more details on it?
Sure. So most of this is just on the website, bankvault.com. The end user tools, Web Safe, I think the standard product there sits at about $20 per user per month. You can just log in, create an account, be up and running in 1 minute. There's probably a much cheaper end user version that we'll release in the very near future for individuals. We want to get this price point down to even less than $5 a month, which we think we can do. So those end user tools are very simple. And if you're a business, a product like Safe Window is really geared more for larger businesses that are logged in all day long, need to transfer out back to their local desktop a file like a CSV file from a bank, for example, to do a bank reconciliation. So these are what we call our end user tools. The Invisible Keyboard for web servers is an enterprise product. If anybody has a web server with users logging in that they want to secure those users, then we can set up a proof of concept, do a small pilot with you at no charge. And we can, the pricing on that is kind of it's a variable formula because at one end of the spectrum, we've got people like Catholic Education rolling this out on their HR payroll system at the moment, which they might have tens of thousands of people that they're paying on the payroll, but the actual number of users is maybe about 30 people. And at the other end of the spectrum, people like the National Australia Bank with 1.5 million users per day, it's just a different equation. So best thing would be just to contact us through the form. I'm happily available as my team to talk to anybody. We're at a point where the technology is really solid. It's completely unique. It's ready for scale, and we're looking for customers and for growth. So we'd be really happy to talk to anybody that's interested. Thanks, Ravi.
Okay. That sounds wonderful. Well, Graham, thanks for your time this afternoon, and we look forward to hopefully having you on another podcast sometime this quarter when your next new products come out. Okay?
Thanks very much, Ravi. It's been great to talk.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Bye.